You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 162. Today's show is a Q&A episode where I answer questions from listeners. The last show was all about the Upstairs Lounge fire. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it and you'll learn a lot too. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum, located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Current exhibits include French Quarter Life, People and Places in the Vieux Carré. For more than 150 years, artists from around the world have worked to capture and share their impressions of New Orleans' most iconic neighborhood. This exhibition gathers 22 paintings from the museum's permanent collections, and it covers the bustle of the French Market, the jasmine of Preservation Hall, and the streets, buildings, and the people of the French Quarter across time and using a variety of techniques. It runs through August 28, 2022, and like all of their exhibits, it's free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip today. The most frequent questions I get are consistently about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where my friend Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase, and she really makes the process fun and easy. Look, New Orleans is a great city, made up of a ton of neighborhoods, each with their own characters and personalities. And while I love it, it can be overwhelming to try to figure out where's the right fit for me, right? So that's where Liz really comes in and makes a difference. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. And the other thing I want to point out that Liz does is she's really great at bringing you into the community once you do move here. So she loves to host parties. She loves to get together with her clients. She really just has a way about her of not only helping you find the right place, but making sure you get settled and get comfortable in your new home. While you're at it, while you're working with Liz, you're going to probably need a secure financing. And that's where Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast comes in. Reach out to him and let Tommy help you get everything in place. That's what we did when we did a refi about a year ago, and it was smooth as could be. We then went back because we were thinking about purchasing another home, which we ultimately didn't move, but we went through the whole process of loan origination again and had a just as easy a time. Tommy and his team over at Gulf Coast Mortgage really do make that easy. And, you know, that can be a really stressful thing, and they really do make it easy. Paperwork wasn't overly complicated. Lots of good communication. It just worked out really well. I'll have links in the show notes, but Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank. Today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. We have perks at all levels, and if you join at the $10 level or higher, we'll mention you on an episode. One of our patrons, Jeannie Howe, asked me a while back if I would give a shout-out to her fiancé, Matthew Scott Viator, for his birthday. It was in March, but the podcast schedule's been crazy, and as you know, I've run some repeats, and then I ran the Upstairs Lounge Fire episode, and I didn't want to add anything to that. So it's been kind of wacky, and I haven't been able to get to it. But Matt, if you're listening, I hope you're having a great year, and this show is dedicated to you, buddy. Finally, before we get to questions, I have a book. Probably many of you already know that, but if you don't, The Beyond Bourbon Street Insider's Guide to New Orleans, officially released on May 1st. Almost immediately, the first production run sold out. They are now being restocked, so a second print run has been done. You can find it at major retailers online like Amazon, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble. You can find it here in the city at Octavia Books and Blue Cypress, as well as our partners at the OW, which is a secondhand upscale furniture store located at 2850 Magazine Street. And just a block or two away, our friends at NOLA T-Shirt Shop, who were on the show recently, Jackie and John Abston, they have about 30 copies in stock, and I'm going to go over there in the next couple days and sign them. So you got plenty of options in places to get the book. And if you want to find out more about the book, listen to episode 157, where we talked about it quite a bit. So now let's get on to today's topic. I get a lot of questions by email, by text, in the Facebook group, and from time to time I like to do these Q&A episodes. It's a good chance to see what's on your mind, and as always, questions from Patreon members at any level go to the top of the list. But what I really enjoy is that a lot of the same themes come up in the messages that get sent to me directly or that show up in the Facebook group, and I realize not all listeners are in the Facebook group, so I like to do these from time to time. So with that, let's jump in. We're going to start, as I mentioned, with questions from Patreon. Let's see. Gary Ogden says, what is your favorite casual restaurant right now? Can you narrow it down to the Garden District? Let's see. In the Garden District, I really love the Avenue Pub owned by Polly Watts. It's a beer place, which also incidentally has a great whiskey list, but the food is terrific. They had cut the menu way back during COVID. At one point, I think they might have even not had food service. And they're slowly building the menu back up. But the food is far better than you might expect from a typical bar or pub. Really, really good. So that's one that comes to mind. In the Irish Channel, which is near enough to the Garden District, I think, Parasols is a bar/restaurant. They have really good New Orleans food, po' boys, some plate lunches, things like that. That comes to mind. And then not far from there is Joey K's on Magazine Street. Joey K's is a great like go-to New Orleans place. Really big portions, really big menu, good place to go with kids. So there's a couple. Let's see. Gary also says, I'm hoping to visit New Orleans during Christmas. Are Revion dinners only offered on Christmas Eve, or is it typically the entire month of December? Hey, Gary, we've actually done two episodes on Revion, one with Tom Fitzmaurice and a second one with Ian McNulty. If you're going to listen to only one of the two, I'd listen to the one with Ian McNulty. It was a couple years ago. But nonetheless, Revion was traditionally, as you allude to, it was a Christmas Eve night tradition. So families would go to a midnight mass, come home and have a big meal. But these days, the Revion tradition in New Orleans at the restaurants goes from Thanksgiving to New Year's Day. A couple of them might cut it off a day or two earlier than that. But that's the season, so it's about 6 weeks. You have time to go to multiple, depending on when you're in town. The menus don't typically come out until like sometime in October, and then you have your pick. It's typically, and it's grown. Last year, I want to say there were somewhere between four and five dozen restaurants. They've also kind of created some subcategories with like some bars have started having things, where they've done some like light plate kind of things. But anyway, it goes from Thanksgiving to New Year's. It's a really great way to get great deals on menus. And a lot of the menus are really inventive and kind of try to look backwards at what foods might have been offered in the past or traditional foods. Obviously, hopefully, it's cooler then, and so you get some hearty meals there. But yeah, so that goes from Thanksgiving to New Year's. Thanks for those questions, Gary. Loretta Davis, my question is, what are some things you or your family do to cope with the brutal heat of the summer months? Well, Loretta, good question. We recently did an episode with Jackie and John Abston, and we asked them about things to do during the summer. So that's one. I think that was episode 159. The episode before that was called Seven Things About New Orleans Right Now. And so that was kind of a combination of things I was thinking and things I might do as a visitor. I think typically what I tell people is try to do your outdoor activities either in the morning or in between indoor activities. And so I'm a big fan of the Historic New Orleans Collection. That's why they're a partner of the show. That's why they're a sponsor of the show. I also really like the Louisiana State Museum system, which includes, among others, the Cabildo and the Presbyter. Those are the buildings and the museums that flank the St. Louis Cathedral. Not far from there is Madame John's Legacy, also part of the museum system and one of the oldest structures in the French Quarter. And then the Jazz Museum, which locals call the old U.S. Mint. It used to be a mint, of course, and it is on Esplanade Avenue. Those are all really good. Not part of this system, but a private museum is the Pharmacy Museum, small museum in the French Quarter. Can spend, 30 minutes to an hour there. World War II Museum is a terrific thing to do when the weather's hot, because you can spend anywhere from half a day to 2 days there easily. We have the Contemporary Art Center, the Ogden Museum of Art. Mixing in a lot of those things is good. I think, again, going in the morning, although like today, I'm recording this July 10th, and at 8 o'clock this morning, it was not so hot, but it was crazy humid. So you're going to run into that some. It's also snowball season, so you can go over to see Ashley Hansen at Hansen's Snow Blizz and get a snowball. We did an episode with Ashley that's one of our more popular ones. That was a long time ago. I had a snowball just the other day. So, you know, I think we try to blend indoor things as well as getting snowballs and, you know, kind of not avoiding outdoors, but not planning on a four-hour experience outdoors. The other thing, if you have kids, we just recently did a staycation. We happened to stay at Le Meridien because we had points, and they have a rooftop pool. There are several hotels with really nice pools. The Roosevelt has a nice outdoor rooftop pool. Le Pavillon has a small but nice rooftop pool. There's several places in the French Quarter that have courtyard pools that are really nice, some of them quite large. So, you know, if you have kids, that's an option too, that you maybe get out and do a little bit of exploring and then go spend some time in the pool. So we try to do a combination of all those things, you know. And the other thing is, it's just hot, and you just have to know that and kind of plan that in terms of how you dress. And, you know, a lot of places have fans and things like that, but there's no getting around if you're going to be outside in, you know, July, August, September here in New Orleans. It's going to be pretty hot. But again, this couple episodes, this couple ideas hopefully are helpful. Let's see, Melissa Roberson Lang. How do locals feel about all of their hidden gems not being so hidden anymore? With the advent of the internet, it seems even the smallest of neighborhood hangouts have been discovered. I think, you know, that's true. That happens. I think about a place like Bullets, which was a great local hangout and then was made famous on the HBO series Tremé and got really popular. And, you know, at one time, Frenchman Street was that way. It was really known among locals. It was a great place to go. It wasn't overrun. You know, many locals today consider it sort of a second Bourbon Street, and that wasn't always the case. But as I thought about this question, I think this is a city of neighborhoods, and those neighborhoods are always changing and kind of regenerating. And, you know, so there's always new hidden gems popping up, and we like to share our city. So I can't think of a place off the top of my head that I'm like, gosh, I wish it wasn't so discovered. I kind of think it's the opposite. You know, so many, one of the things that we love about New Orleans is that there's not many chains. You know, there's almost everything is mom and pop, from restaurants to little stores and bars and all that kind of stuff. And we want those people to succeed. And so, you know, the best way for them to succeed is for us to share them with other people. And, you know, word of mouth goes a long way. So at least speaking for myself, and I don't think I'm alone, I don't think it's such a big deal about the hidden gems. And there are always still the hole-in-the-wall bars, the neighborhood restaurants that, you know, some of them do get really popular and that they get really crowded. But I think that for the most part, it works out. You know, the one that comes to mind is Parkway Bakery. There was a time when Parkway Bakery was really, really good and really popular, but it wasn't crazy. And now it's almost impossible to go there and not have to wait in line. And some of the things that you used to be able to do, like you used to be able to go in the bar and the bar wouldn't be crowded and you could order really quickly in the bar and you could kind of skip the line, and locals sort of knew that. You know, on the one hand, that kind of stinks because you have to plan it. On the other hand, I couldn't be happier for Justin and Jay Nix that they're successful, you know. So I think it's kind of a mix. I also think there's plenty of hidden gems still to this day, whether it's little museums. Again, I already mentioned the Pharmacy Museum, or the Hurricane Katrina Memorial at the end of Canal Street is a small, simple thing, you know, kind of a quiet tribute among a bunch of cemeteries. It's really moving, though. It's really interesting. People don't know it's there. I mentioned it in the book. I think that for the most part, I'm fine with it. So let's see, Joseph Griot, has there been any update on the opening of the Indian Cultural Museum? And I assume Joe is referring to the Backstreet Cultural Museum. And this is really good timing to ask this question because the grand opening, they have moved to 1531 St. Philip Street, still in the Treme. Their grand opening was yesterday. So I'm recording this on July 10th, 2022. They had a second line from the old location to the new location yesterday. I think admission is about $20 and for adults. There's some discounts for senior citizens and children. But what happened, for people that don't know, is that Mr. Sylvester Francis, who was the owner and proprietor and really the backbone of the place, he died early on in COVID, and his family tried to keep it running. And then I think there was some significant damage during Hurricane Ida last year. And so they have been closed. And then they had tried to partner with the African American History Museum, and I think they still want to do that, but they ran into some permit problems. So finally they've found a space and they've just reopened. I'm so excited for them because combined with, we also lost during COVID the House of Dance and Feathers, which was run by a man named Ronald Lewis, who passed away also during COVID. And those two comprise the majority of the, I would say, preservation of the Black Mardi Gras Indian culture. There's some exhibits at the Louisiana State Museum system, but those two men, one, knew so much, and the artifacts they have, in many cases, are priceless, because otherwise they end up scattered at museums or private collections across the country. Or in the old days, the tradition among Indians was that they would burn their costumes, their suits, so they weren't even around. So, really good timing. Super excited to have it back open again. Can't wait to go check out the new space. So there you go, Joe. Just opened. So really good timing. Kristen Ketchelbane asks, which swamp tours do you recommend? So I'm going to go in a slightly different direction than you might be expecting. I prefer and recommend swamp tours that are done in a kayak. We have a partner, a sponsor, Jessica Gawley, who owns Honey Island Swamp Tours. Jessica is not only a wonderful guide and knows the Honey Island Swamp inside and out, she's passionate about it. She's passionate about the conservation of it. She just knows the ins and outs of it, not only the trees and the growth, but the animals and all of that. Years ago, we did an episode with our friends from Canoe and Trail. At the time, they used to go in a different swamp. Now, I think they operate out of Manchac. I'm totally against the swamp tours that feed the alligators. I think that promotes all kinds of problems for the alligators and for people. There are tours that I think are fine. Some of the airboat tours, some of the mechanized boat tours, they do a good job. But for my money, I would much rather see someone go on a kayak tour where it's slower. You're literally closer to the water, but it's fine. The kayaking, the water's smooth. It's not difficult. And you end up with a super educated, super passionate guide like Jessica. So that would be my advice. Go to Honey Island Swamp Tours with Jessica Gawley. Ellis in Bowdoin. There's always a lot of chatter online about increased crime. What's it like on the ground? And are people feeling anxious about this, or is it status quo? I'm really glad that this question came up. The other day on Twitter, of all things, someone kind of hounded me. I asked a question about who went to Essence Fest, and if you did, what did you enjoy? And this person wrote back and said, I didn't go because of the crime. And then when I pushed back on that, it was Twitter. So it was ugly, and so I ended up blocking him. But the bottom line is, crime has gotten worse in the city. We are leading the country right now in murders per capita, which is obviously not a good thing. There's been a rash, although lately it seems better. There have been a rash of carjackings. You know, in terms of why it's happening, I personally think it has to do with infrastructure and the fact that we need to do a better job in the city of taking care of our kids, from education to things to do in the summer to work and learning opportunities. I try really hard on this show and in the podcast, in the Facebook group, to not be political. But In this case, I am going to say, I think the mayor and the district attorney and the chief of police are not doing a great job right now on this subject, infrastructure in general and crime as well. I think that the city council is pretty good. We had some elections within the last year. I don't think they're perfect, but I think they're pretty good and they are trying. But I think to solve this, it requires all of the groups that I just mentioned. I also think, you know, when Katrina hit, there were problems with the school system for decades. And when Katrina hit, in some ways, there was a moment of opportunity where we had a chance to fix that. And the powers that be at the time chose that the way we were going to fix that was to go to an all-charter school system. And I believe we were, and maybe still are, the only major metropolitan area in the country that is 100% charter school. I don't think that was a good idea. I don't think it's proven to be a good idea. And regardless of what your feelings are on charter schools, to go 100% charter schools, at least that experiment here in New Orleans, from my viewpoint, has not been successful. And so I think we struggle with making sure our kids get a good education here. And then we don't have the infrastructure set up properly to make sure that kids have things to do in the summer and after school. And, you know, they have working parents and making sure we're taking care of kids and helping them learn the life skills that they need. And I say that because so much of the crime recently has been committed by young kids, 13, 14, 15-year-old teenagers. You know, and I don't think the answer is to sort of lock everybody up. I also, it's complicated, obviously, but the crime has increased. There's no doubt about it. I'll say a couple of things about that from our perspective. We live in the heart of the city. We actually live not that far from where the mayor lives. We talk about the crime. We talk about it with our kids. We also still choose to live here. I think that there's a couple of things you can do. One, obviously, you can be aware, as you would in any big city and when you're traveling. I think that taking ride shares helps because you're not dealing with parking a few blocks away from someplace, or these carjackings have been really scary. They do seem to have declined. I know they made some arrests. Perhaps it was sort of a group and that's been deterred. But again, if you're a visitor, you're probably taking ride shares or public transportation or walking, all of which are easy and good ideas in the city. You know, it's pretty compact to get to places. We take ride shares now quite often. You know, there's the added benefit, of course, if we're going to have a drink or two, then obviously it's much better to take a ride share than to be driving. You know, I think I'm in all parts of the city, whether for research a lot of times, you know, whether it's meeting a listener or researching the book or researching the podcast. I don't know, in any given week, I'm in 3, 4, 5 different parts of the city, pretty disparate. And I don't really feel unsafe. I do feel the need to be just aware, you know, of what's going on. The other thing I would say is, and this is anecdotal, but anecdotal based on my years of experience, when you think about crime downtown and in the French Quarter, it seems to me that there are two places, one at the corner of Rampart or Basin and Canal Street, and then Bourbon Street and Canal Street. Those two corners seem to have a greater number of incidents. I am told that part of the reason for that is that maybe those are like intersections of like gang areas or territories. And I don't think we have a huge gang problem, but like any big city, there are gangs. And I think sometimes what happens, and again, some of this is anecdotal, but we end up in those two spots in particular, kind of right on the edge of territories. And so fights break out, gunfights break out, you know, and obviously that's right in touristy areas. Now, that first block of Bourbon Street off of Canal has a couple of really good restaurants. It's also where the strip clubs are. So, you know, I don't have much interest in that. I do like the restaurants that happen to be right there, but I avoid that intersection. And then the other intersection, Rampart Basin right there by Canal, is where the Sanger Theater is. And so we do go to the Sanger to see plays and performances and concerts. Again, these days we take a ride share, so we're dropped off and picked up right at the entrance. You know, and I think that's the best we can do. I don't want to sound so negative. I also want to be realistic. I'm not sure all the reasons. You know, I'm not an expert in this, but crime has increased. I would, to answer your question, Ellis, people are concerned about it. People are voicing their concerns to the elected officials. I think people are voting, you know, trying to reflect that. There's a lot of frustration, again, with the city government, with the police, with the district attorney right now. And I'm always hopeful that there will be change in the city at times like this. Let's see. Mark Rustini asks, I think it'd be interesting if you mentioned some of your favorite books, both fiction and nonfiction, about New Orleans. Books that capture the city. Feel free to include your own book. I will. I recently read a book called Stay Out of New Orleans by P. Curran. It had a French Quarter vibe that really transported me. I'm not familiar with that book, but I do have a list. And I actually did, I don't remember what episode it was, but I did an episode about books about New Orleans. So you can go back and search that in your favorite podcast app or on Spotify. But I put together a quick list in no particular order, just kind of glancing around. In my home office / studio, I have a bunch of bookshelves with New Orleans books that I particularly like and or that I've interviewed the authors. So in no particular order here, Tinderbox. I just reran the episode with Bobby Fiesler about the Upstairs Lounge fire. I think not only is that a wonderful book about a terrible tragedy in the LGBTQ+ community, it's well written. It really brings to life the stories of the people and their families and the struggle and kind of the time. So that's one. Frank Perez wrote Southern Decadence. Again, another book about the LGBTQ community. Really good book. We Cast a Shadow by Maurice Ruffin. I need to get Maurice on the show. He has since written a second book. I need to finish reading that second book so I can get him on the show. But We Cast a Shadow is a book of fiction that was released now a couple years ago that felt it was supposed to be sort of a dystopian view, but so much of it ended up being reality. So that was really interesting. But he's terrific guy, terrific author. We Cast a Shadow. The Yellow House by Sarah Broom. One family's perspective of living through and then the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Creole Italian by Justin Nystrom. Did an episode with Justin on the impact of Sicilians in New Orleans. I come from a Sicilian family. So, and do most people that would say they're Italian in New Orleans, they're Sicilian for the most part. Really, that was an interesting book. One of my favorite books about New Orleans is The World That Made New Orleans by Ned Sublett. Feels like you're time traveling. Really just a great book. James Lee Burke, the really great fiction author, has a series called the Dave Robichaux novels. I think there might be 24 in that series. Dave Robichaux's home in the books is in New Iberia, about 140 miles west of New Orleans, but a lot of the scenes are set in the New Orleans area. Again, that's someone I would like to get on the show. So those books are really fun and really good. Probably the most poignant book about Katrina to me is One Dead in Attic. It was written by Chris Rose, and it was a series largely of articles he had written at the time in the New Orleans paper. Yeah, so that's One Dead in Attic. A pair of books, I interviewed this author on both of these two separate episodes, A New Orleans Voodoo Priestess about Marie Laveau and Madame LaLaurie. Bienville's Dilemma by Richard Campanella. That's a great book because exactly what it says, Bienville's Dilemma, is sort of about why is New Orleans here, you know, the actual location. He also wrote the book Bourbon Street. We did an episode about that one, and that was intriguing about the history of the street and the fact that the Bourbon Street we know today, really in the early 20th century and certainly before, didn't exist. It was largely a residential neighborhood, a residential street. It wasn't the most important street in the French Quarter. And while the podcast is called Beyond Bourbon Street, that's one that's really fascinating. In fact, we had lunch with my mom yesterday, and she was mentioning that one of the 160 or so that we have done is one that really surprised her in a lot of ways and was intriguing. One of the most popular episodes we've done is with my friend Sally Asher, who wrote the great book, The St. Louis Cemeteries of New Orleans. And the thing I love about that book is Sally tells the stories. She talks about the cemeteries through the viewpoint of the stories of the people who are buried in those cemeteries. And so she really brings to life the city and the character of the cemeteries. There's three St. Louis cemeteries in New Orleans. And she just tells the stories of the people that are buried there. And that book and those stories have forever changed the way I think about any time I see a cemetery anywhere in the country, in that it really personalized for me, you know, every one of those markers, every one of those tombstones, mausoleums, whatever it might be, there's a story there. And sometimes they may be unremarkable in the sense that maybe the person isn't famous, but in its own way, right? Everyone has a remarkable story. And so I find myself, when I am in a cemetery or even passing by, driving past a cemetery, wondering about what are the stories in that cemetery. And then certainly, as I spend time, whether it's doing photography or doing research here in the city, I'm often drawn back to that book. One of my absolute favorite books, one of my favorite New Orleanians, The St. Louis Cemeteries of New Orleans by Sally Asher. Terrific. I don't know if I mentioned this one yet, The Accidental City, another really good book. Why New Orleans Matters by Piazza. Also, I think a post-Katrina book. Terrific story, terrific book. Nine Lives by Dan Baum was made into a sort of a play, musical adaptation. Former guests on the podcast, Paul Sanchez and Vance Folkerson, were both involved in that. The book is terrific. It tells the story of Katrina through nine different perspectives. Again, Mark mentioned it, a plug for my book, The Beyond Bourbon Street, Insider's Guide to New Orleans. I intentionally worked with the publisher to make, I was not trying to create a Fromers or Fodors type guide. I wanted a guide, and they wanted a guide that was a mixture of the places that I recommend along with stories and trying to bring the neighborhoods to life, bring the places that I recommend to life. You know, and hopefully so far people, I think so far that's proven to be successful based on the feedback I've gotten, which I'm very grateful for. So it is a guidebook, but it also, you know, I try to bring the city to life for you. So I would certainly appreciate you checking out the book. If you want to learn more about that, we did a whole episode about the book. I want to say episode 157. So you find out more about that, and you can pick up the book again, as I mentioned, online or in local stores. They're just starting to get it back in stock. Local bookstores, I mentioned the OW, NOLA T-shirt Club. I think Flirty Girl has it. And we're working on getting it in more places. I also like, I guess it's a guidebook of sorts called Secret New Orleans. And I think the secret part, there's a series of those. So I think there's Secret whatever, insert city, you know, a couple different cities. It's kind of a pocket-sized book. They have some really good, interesting places or simple things. But kind of getting back to the question about hidden gems, it's really a fun guide. You know, certainly pick up my guide, please. But if you're going to get a second one that's kind of different and off the beaten path, the Secret New Orleans book is a good one. Lots of little anecdotes, lots of small, easy to go see things. And that's pretty fun. So that's one other I would recommend. And that one's actually worth to me, even if you're not coming anytime soon, because it's not the kind of guide that you're going to use to plan your whole trip. It's just a series of interesting vignettes. And so that's one that would be a fun read, even if you don't have a trip planned real soon. I don't know if I mentioned at the start of this question, one of the interviews that I have lined up, but it won't be probably until the fall because of her schedule, is that I'm going to interview Susan Larson. Susan has an excellent podcast on WWNO, which is the local PBS radio station, also affiliated with NPR, called The Reading Life. And so she interviews mostly local authors or authors who have written about New Orleans or about Louisiana. And I'm really excited to get Susan on and kind of talk to her about this, some of her ideas about books that, you know, that are her favorites or books that caught her off guard or just interesting books. Also, recently we did an episode with Bruce McGee from the Louisiana Anthology Project. They also have a podcast, the Louisiana Anthology Podcast. And they interview a lot of authors who have written about Louisiana. So that's a wealth of resources between all of that. And again, if you go back and search through my archives, Mark, you'll find an episode where I named some of the books that I've already mentioned. But I think I probably also talked about some other books there as well. Oh, I'm also looking at right now. I did an episode not long ago with Macon Fry about the Batcher houses. And so the book is called They Called Us River Rats, really great, fun, entertaining book. That was a fun episode to do. So if you didn't listen to that one, I would definitely go check that out. And that was, I think, episode 156. So that would have put it sometime back in early April. Again, April of this year, 2022. Dan Tamora, a buddy and I are considering riding in this year's Crew of Boo Halloween Parade. Wondering if you might have any helpful tips for first-time out-of-town float riders. Also, any favorite costume shops you can recommend in or around the French Quarter. So the second question first. A couple of my favorite shops have closed through COVID. There used to be one or two in the Central Business District. I'm not sure if they're still there. The New Orleans Costume Company, and then there was another one. So if you search costume companies in New Orleans, you can find that. I like, not in the French Quarter, but on Magazine Street, the Funky Monkey is kind of a combination vintage clothing slash costume shop. So that's a place lots of New Orleanians go. We go to come up with ideas and get wigs and things like that. Typically, if you're riding in a parade, the costume is provided. I don't quite remember if that's true in the Crew of Boo or if they just wear like color coordinated t-shirts. So you'd have to check that. I think your topic is actually an interesting one in general about, and I think there's another question later about different perspectives on Mardi Gras. But in terms of your question about helpful tips, the first thing is pace yourself. Often you have to get to the parade lineup hours before the parade begins. And if you happen to be someone who enjoys an adult beverage, you really got to pace yourself because you can end up getting really drunk before the parade even starts, or you get the adrenaline's flowing right when the parade starts. You start drinking a lot quickly, and next thing you know, it's a blur and you don't remember. I may or may not have had that experience a couple of times. It's just the excitement and the energy. And again, if you're there early and there's not a lot else to do and you happen to be drinking adult beverages. So that's one tip. The other is, Crew of Boo is at night, so you don't have to worry. It may be hot, but you don't have to worry about sunscreen and all of that. Nothing like being on a float and getting cooked. That's not a lot of fun. The other thing I would say is that it's a really interesting, unique perspective to be on a float and see the crowd. Everything from the kids rushing around to the grandparents and everyone in between. There's an awful lot going on in the crowd. And it's easy to get in the rhythm of just throw, and you feel sort of this adrenaline and anxiety about getting, sort of serving the people, right? Throwing throws and all of that. It is worth it to consciously step back every once in a while and just take a breath, take a drink, take a sip of water, take a beer, whatever, and just enjoy for the moment watching what's happening on the ground below you, because it's a sort of a diorama that's just this incredible experience and really hard to put into words. And I don't even mean grabbing your phone and taking a picture, although that's certainly, what everyone does these days. I think it's just stopping and implanting for a moment or imprinting for a moment that experience of what's going on around you in your brain. So that's the thing. Pace yourself. Take some time periodically throughout to just stop for a second and enjoy and kind of soak in the experience and have a great time. It's such a fun thing to do. So good questions. Thanks, Dan. All right, last up from our patrons, Adair McDonald. My husband and I will be returning with our 9-year-old son in October. Anything specific to that time of year that's great for families? Your podcast has been a huge help in the past. Thank you. We did some great restaurants, City Park, Frenchman Street, Jazz Brunch, followed by Doreen Ketchin's Swamp Tour, poking around the quarter. Yeah, I think I've done an episode, about fall, about things to do in the fall and about festivals. So, festivals have really taken a hit during COVID and moved around a lot. So it's best to kind of just go online and Google fall festivals or October festivals in New Orleans and see what's going on. The Crew of Boo that Dan just mentioned, if you happen to be in New Orleans for Halloween, is a ton of fun. October is a time of year when the weather can be glorious and it can also be 95 degrees. So that's kind of just a mix. I always suggest to people when they have, especially young children, and your son's about the right age, obviously old enough to have opinions and ideas, ask what he's interested in and then build your trip or at least some of your trip around that. So maybe it's beignets, maybe it's snowballs, maybe it's going to try pralines, getting a few different ones from different places and doing like a family kind of taste test, see what's interesting there. There's the insectarium and the aquarium, which are being combined into one building as I mentioned this. down on the river. I think taking the Canal Street ferry across the river to Algiers Point, even if you do that and come back, is a fun thing to do. And especially if you catch a good weather day. You mentioned street musicians like Doreen Ketchens. That's always fun. My kids love to go discover the musicians in the French Quarter. Bouffe's Lounge on Esplanade Avenue, right on the edge of the French Quarter and the Marigny, is a restaurant slash bar lounge. They have live music often. And so because they serve food, you can have kids in there. And of course, tap rooms, breweries, brew pubs, you know, typically allow children. 9 years old is probably a little old for like a bounce house. I know Urban South Brewery on weekends used to have a bounce house. Again, my kids are 10, so, you know, they're starting to outgrow that. But I tend to start with, and we also did an episode, a really early one, like maybe episode 10, 11, or 12 about things to do with kids. So you might check that out as well. But I would start by just asking what his interests are and then building around that. And that's one where once you kind of get some of those interests, if you are on Facebook, jumping in our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street crew, and asking that specific question, here's, you know, our son's 9 years old, we're coming in October, here's his interest. You'll get, not only will I be able to answer that if I see it, but you'll get lots of great responses, both from people who have visited as well as New Orleanians that have kids. So I hope that helps. All right, that's the end of the questions from the Patreon group, and that's a lot of questions. We have a bunch more from our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street crew. And the way I worded the question in the crew was, ask me your questions and or give me your ideas about potential podcast episodes. And you guys really delivered on that. So there's kind of a mixture here, and we'll go through that. First up, David Hubble says, if you ever want to talk about Mellitah, I'm happy to help. David is an active member in the group and is passionate about Louisiana and Southern cooking in general. The Mellitah, if I remember right, and I ought to know this, is sort of a prickly green bell pepper looking fruit. Is it part of the Cayote family? I think so. I'm embarrassed, David, that I can't remember off the top of my head. It's really good stuffed with either like ground meat and onions or... you'll often see it with like a shrimp stuffing. So that's something I'll keep in mind, David. I appreciate that. Polly Watts, who owns the Avenue Pub that I mentioned earlier, mentioned, have you interviewed Jaylen Isles? She's the founder of Where Black Nola Eats and a serious champion of Black-owned restaurants in the city. I have not interviewed Jaylen's, but since I put this question out, Polly has connected me to Jaylen's and we're in the process of setting up an interview. So Where Black Nola Eats is a Facebook group, and it was created, I don't know, have I mentioned? So I'm recording this for the second time. I recorded once earlier today, and it didn't all record because the card filled up. So I'm a little confused about whether or not I've covered this and talked about Essence Festival. But there is a Facebook group called Where Nola Eats or Nola Eats or something like that. And some restaurants close the week of Essence Fest, which is always the weekend around and the days before Jazz Fest. Some of that undoubtedly is due to slow time of year, perhaps July 4th, the holiday, wanting to give their employees a break. Some of it undoubtedly is due to racism, if we're being honest, and doesn't, you know, they're closing during a period of time when a lot of people come to the city. So Essence Festival is a festival that was started 25, 26 years ago by Essence Magazine. It's a combination of musicians, musical performances at the Superdome and the Smoothie King Center. And there's also this, and the performances range from small artists to huge, well-known names. Janet Jackson performed this year, for instance. One of the things that also makes it unique is there are a series of exhibitions and vendors and free sessions, like learning sessions, whether they're on finances or just all kinds of educational topics at the convention center. It's really a neat thing. It brings a lot of people to town. My day job, my office is connected to a big hotel. So I see all the people coming in. I see them dressed out for the, you know, for an evening out, for the concerts. And so every year on social media, people will list restaurants that have closed that week, right? To sort of call them out, you know, rightfully and intentionally to say, you know, clearly they don't want the money. This is, you know, this is not right. And so if I'm not mistaken, Where Black Nola Eats came out of that. It was this idea of We want to make sure we highlight Black-owned businesses and businesses that are supportive and that are options for people when they come in town for Essence Fest. And it blew up. It's now a very large Facebook group. I'm a member. I know Polly's a member. It's a great resource of places to eat. It is also a really great thing that they're doing in terms of highlighting Black-owned businesses and being a resource. So people will say, I saw the other day, someone said, you know, I'm getting married in New Orleans and I want to support Black-owned businesses as much as I can. I'm looking for a photographer. I'm looking for a caterer, you know, all those sorts of things. So Polly, I appreciate the idea. It had been every time Essence Festival rolls around, it had been on my mind and I just hadn't done it. So now I've connected with Jalen and we will get her on the show soon. So thank you. Daniel Collins says, I'm an alum of the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary and would love to know more about the Gentilly neighborhood and how it's changed over the years. So longtime listeners know that Teddy's Grill, my family's restaurant for 36 years, was in Gentilly. We still own the building, and now it's occupied. The place that was Teddy's Grill is now the original Fiorella's Cafe. Really good spot. And not that far from the place that Daniel mentions. So I don't think I've done an episode about Gentilly. And I've started with Jackie and John Abston from NOLA T-Shirt Club. I've started this idea of like wanting to interview business owners in a neighborhood and also kind of talk about their own neighborhood experience, where they like to go, what they like to do, that sort of thing. So there's an idea brewing around there about, could I do something like that with Gentilly? So I'll think about that. I also think the Baptist Theological Seminary has been there a long time and has its own history that's, I think, pretty interesting. And they maybe are started off in a building that used to be like a Sears, or maybe not a Sears. I think it was a place called Barker's. And they have grown over time to this whole kind of gated community, but it's large. So it's interesting in its own right. So thank you for the idea, Daniel. Leanna Fisher says, my daughter and I love New Orleans so much so that she's starting Tulane as a freshman this year. That's awesome. She moves in August 15th. My husband's never been to New Orleans, and it'll be his first time when we drop her off. We know he'll love it, but as you know, August 15th is not exactly prime weather. What activities do you recommend? Again, I think we kind of covered this earlier. I've done a couple episodes recently about what to do in the summer, what to do in the heat. The key is to mix indoor and outdoor things. Take advantage of snowballs. Go get a snowball from my friend Ashley Hansen at Snowblizz. You know, go to some museums. Spend some time wandering in and out. I don't know if I mentioned earlier, there's an ironworks place down in the French Quarter called Bevolo, B-E-V-O-L-O. They make gas lanterns mostly. But in the back of it, they have a working workshop that's also a museum. It's free. You can wander in off Exchange Alley from the back side of it. And that's a really cool thing. You can spend 15 minutes in there, get out of the heat. They're working. They'll talk to you about what they're doing. You can kind of see some examples of old ironworks. You know, you can pick some of the bigger museums like the World War II Museum or some of the smaller ones, again, depending on what his interest is. And, you know, I've done an episode with Ashley Hansen about snowballs. Certainly in August, we're still in the middle of snowball season. There's a couple things I would suggest there. Ashley Elizabeth, what if you covered a topic that's been done, like Mardi Gras, but from a different perspective? Have someone on from a crew and they can explain what it's like, how to join, what it means to be part of the crew, even a few different people from different crews. I think this is a great idea, Ashley. I'm thinking there are members of the Facebook group. I'm thinking of you, Emmett Dupas, who's also the head of Bienville Capital, one of our sponsors. I'm thinking of David Mora, who both of those gentlemen ride in Endymion. I think it would be fun to get a crew captain on. I've ridden a few times, although it's been a while, but I really like that idea. In my mind, Ashley, I'm thinking of a panel of 2 to 3, 4 people. Again, maybe a crew captain, maybe a rider of a couple different crews. Everyone that rides in a carnival crew thinks that their organization is the best. And so that's kind of a friendly, fun rivalry. That might be a fun thing to put together, particularly from some of the larger crews. Also, we have some terrific all female-only crews. So I really love that idea. I'm going to play with that one. Thank you. Ashley also says, it could be a challenge, but what about someone like Mason Hereford from Turkey and the Wolf? His cookbook just came out, and he recently competed on Iron Chef. And then there was kind of a discussion between Francisco Wu and Ashley Elizabeth, who also both suggested and agreed on Isaac Toups. Isaac has worked and done a bunch of things they mentioned for Ukrainian refugees. So Turkey and the Wolf, kind of interesting thing about them, they recently released this cookbook to really great acclaim. It's been great. Their first printing, I think, was on a container ship that fell into the ocean. So the book was delayed. I have experienced my own, through publishing my own book, I have learned all about the printing world, if you will, and shortages and glue and paper and all these things. So their books fell into the ocean, is my understanding, but they've now got another print run. They're out. The reviews are really amazing. I'm intrigued about Isaac Toups. Toups owns a place called Toups Meadery on Carrollton Avenue in Mid-City. He's one that this idea about gentility, about talking to someone in the neighborhood about the neighborhood, he's the one that comes to mind when I think about Mid-City. As the name implies, it's not a place for vegans or vegetarians, although I think they have a token dish. I've actually been there with someone who was vegetarian or vegan, and they had a delicious meal. I don't remember what it was, but that's a really great restaurant. They did a lot during COVID too for the service industry. I don't know that they still do it, but for a while during COVID, they were doing a service industry meal where it was free. So anybody in the service industry could go and just get a free meal. And they did that for a long time. So I appreciate those ideas. Something for me to consider, certainly. Gianne Arnold. I think a great topic for a future show would be uniquely New Orleans charities and nonprofits. Bridge House, Grace House comes to mind, and so many others would be great to highlight and celebrate. There's so much good being done in our city. I agree, that's a good topic. I haven't done one like that, and I think that's an interesting, that's something for me to put on my list and sort of stew over a little bit about how to do that. And just kind of side note, often that's what happens. I keep a list in an app called Trello of podcast topics. And sometimes they're really clear cut and I know exactly what I want to do. Maybe a book by Richard Campanella, maybe an update on the food scene with Ian McNulty, something like that. And other times I get a topic and I don't quite have figured out how I want to approach the topic. And so it'll sit there. Sometimes it'll sit there for months. Sometimes it'll sit there for a couple years until it clicks. The Make and Fry one about the Batcher houses was a great example. I knew of the existence of the Batcher houses. I had done some research and knew there wasn't a lot. No one had published a book about it. There wasn't a lot. So it just sat there for a couple of years. And then Macon published his book last fall or last year sometime. And not only did he publish a book, he lives in one of the 12 or 13 Batcher houses. So that topic that had been sitting on that list for a long time just like came together. And this is one I need to think about how to do that, but I really like the idea. So thank you for that. Sharon Bertolio says, perhaps you could interview someone from the crew of Red Beans about their community work. This kind of actually ties into the prior one. Crew of Red Beans is a walking crew with a social mission. So they are a carnival crew. They have a parade route. They march and they sew designs on suits, but the designs are all made out of red beans. So really interesting, kind of amazingly creative artwork. But they have a big emphasis on helping the community. So they are often raising money for charities or disaster victims, COVID, all that kind of stuff. And so a big part of why they exist is not only to have fun and to party, but to give to the community. So that's a good one too. And I know several people in the crew of Red Beans, so I appreciate that. Mark Wingfield, what are a couple of food, drink, / New Orleans history and voodoo, / ghost tours you would recommend? So I'm not sure if that question is all about tours, so I'm going to answer it that way. In terms of food and drink, there's an amazing travel guide, if you will, called the New Orleans or the Beyond Bourbon Street Insider's Guide to New Orleans that I think does a terrific job of narrowing the 1,600 or so restaurants in the city down to the ones that I would take you to. So I'm being a little facetious and a little bit not there, but pick up a copy of the book. In terms of tours, a couple of former partners, Two Chicks Walking Tours and Nola Architecture Tours, they both do tours in the Garden District. Nola Architecture Tours with Katrina Horning does a really interesting tour of the Marigny, but again, through the lens of architecture. Two Chicks does a couple different tours as well. They do a garden district. They do a, when Lafayette or when St. Louis Cemetery number one is open, they do a cemetery tour. They do a French Quarter tour. They sometimes do a nighttime cemetery or a nighttime French Quarter tour. I want to say it's called Brothels and Bordellos. So not a tour you would take the kids on, but a really fun, interesting look at the history and sort of the red light history of New Orleans. Again, that's Two Chicks Walking Tours with my friend Christine Miller. In terms of ghost and voodoo tours, I typically recommend Jonathan Weiss. I can't remember what the name of his company is, but many of our members have gone and enjoyed tours with Jonathan. And we have a crew member who recently became a New Orleans resident, Orion Cooling. And I hope I'm saying that right, Orion. I should know that since I've met you many times. I think it's C-O-U-L-I-N-G. You can find him in the Facebook group. And I think he does voodoo / ghost tours as well. So there's a few for you. In terms of the food drink tours, a couple of the small tour companies that focus on that, I haven't heard much from during COVID. I can recommend my friend Elizabeth Pierce, who was a guest on the show, has a wonderful book called Drink Dat, where she highlighted 100 bars, kind of the range of dive bars to really fancy places in the city. She has a tour and a website and a podcast all called Drink and Learn. So you can take a tour in the French Quarter and get a dose of history and three or four small drinks and have a good time, learn about the drinks, learn about the city. She's a terrific storyteller, really, and just a fun person. So if that's kind of the question, that would be my answer there. Let's see, Mark also says, I've heard that taking a ferry ride to Algiers and walking the bank there is a good way to spend an hour or two seeing New Orleans from a different point of view. I've also read that the ferry schedule can be inconsistent and somewhat unreliable to plan a day around. What are your thoughts? I agree on all of that. So it's about, I think it's $2 each way. I think that's right. It's passenger only. $2 each way to go across. Well worth taking the ferry. You get the breeze. You get the river traffic. Really interesting. When you get over to the other side, there's one great view back of the French Quarter. It's also a lot of Victorian-style architecture, lots of gingerbread details on the houses. A couple good places to eat over there. Several good places to drink. They have a historic preservation society in Algiers. I think if you look up Algiers, New Orleans, walking tour, there's like a free guided tour that will take you by like some of the great jazz musicians of the past. They are also redoing the what would you call it, I guess the dock on the at the foot of Canal Street, and so it is kind of a mess right now. So it is one of those things you need to look ahead of time. I think if you go to Norta, N-O-R-T-A, I think it's .org, might be .com, but I think it's .org. That's also the website where you get all the information about streetcars and buses. That's the resource to go find out what the schedule is with the ferries and what's going on. But having said that, it's well worth doing. It's a lot of fun. That's a fun thing to do with kids. That's also a fun thing to do when it's hot because you get in the ferry, you get a little bit of a break, you get a little bit of the breeze. And again, if you're an adult and enjoy adult beverages, you can go across. There's a couple good bars there I mentioned in the book. You can also, there's a neighborhood taco stand called Barracuda on Chapatoulas Uptown, and they have recently opened one in Algiers. There's a good pizza place called Tavolino's over there. And again, a couple bars, a couple breakfast spots. So yeah, that's a fun thing to do, particularly when if you've done a lot of New Orleans or you just want to kind of take it easy and take a break. Mark also says, I've had a couple of fun discussions on New Orleans themed Facebook pages concerning how much we should plan the details of a trip to New Orleans. I'm a big planner. Planning is part of the fun for me, even if we don't stick to my plans. Many others, however, believe the best way to enjoy a few days in New Orleans is to go light on the planning and let the trip happen. What are your thoughts? So, not to sound like a broken record, but I actually talk about that in my book. And I think that comes down to knowing your group. You said you're a planner, so I think it makes sense to plan. I do also think that New Orleans reminds me in a lot of ways of visiting Europe, visiting a place like Paris, where there's an awful lot to be said for slowing down, and finding a place that's comfortable, whether that's a cafe or a bar or whatever it might be, and just kind of soaking in the city, the sounds and the ambiance and the drifting music and the calliope from the steamboat on the river and that kind of stuff. So I think it's a mix, but if you're a planner, plan. If you are in, and I think you are, if you are in our Facebook group, there's a post that I'm almost certain we pinned that this one guy, and I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. I think it's Steve. They were here for 3 or 4 days and they did like 65 things we recommended and they listed them all out. It's an amazing thread. It was just like stunning to see, like way more than I would ever try to accomplish, but that's what they did. And he listed all out. So that is a post that people frequently go look at. It's a perfect place. You know, obviously you get all my recommendations, but he took the best of our recommendations, kind of blended them with what they wanted to do. And, you know, if you're looking for a plan, that's a great place to start. So I think you got to know who's coming on the trip. If you're a planner, to say, just take it all kind of as it comes is going to drive you crazy. So maybe you compromise and you plan some things and you leave some things a little free. Or you say, this morning's going to be the French Quarter, and the one thing I want to see is this museum, but I'm going to kind of go with the flow and just wander up and down the streets and take in the French Quarter as it comes to me. And what I mean by that is, as you see the street musicians, stop and check them out. If you see, you know, an interesting shop or a gallery, stop and check it out, so that you've kind of blended planning today or this morning or whatever is my French Quarter day. But I'm not going to plan out every moment of that day. You know, so hopefully that's helpful. But go find that pinned post in the Facebook group. It's an amazing amount of things this person accomplished. But it also kind of was a distillation of maybe, you know, at the time, 140 episodes we had done. And again, you know, I've said this now a dozen times, but I think the book is also really helpful. But I talk about this exact thing, like, you know, and even the person earlier that asked about their 9-year-old son, I think so much of planning a trip to New Orleans is knowing who you are and knowing the people that you're with and everyone's collective interests, and then trying to pick a few things that match that. Because otherwise, again, you know, you take kids or you take non-drinkers to Bourbon Street, that's not going to be a great time. You know, on the flip side, there are some really great bars in the city, both high-end and dives, that are terrific if that's your thing. If museums are your thing, the Louisiana State Museum system has several really good museums. The World War II Museum, if you're a veteran or your family member was a veteran or you're just interested in World War II history, it's affiliated with the Smithsonian. And we lived in Northern Virginia for 8 or 9 years. It's every bit as well done as a Smithsonian museum. So the answer is to kind of know yourself and know your party. That's what I would go with, Mark. Thanks for the questions. I'm losing my voice a little bit. We don't have too many more to go. And again, as I mentioned, I screwed up the first recording. So this is the second time today that I am doing this episode. David LaFaire, have you interviewed Sam Mulvaney? He lives in the French Quarter and his home is called the Museum of Bad Taste. My wife had him on her YouTube channel and he's a character with great stories. I've never heard of him. I will look him up and add him to the list. I would imagine if you've named your home the Museum of Bad Taste, by definition, you're a character. So, all right, thank you for that. Andrea Buckner Fasciato, how did you start your podcast and what has been the best and worst things about it that you didn't expect? Well, we did, James Cullen, who did the, James is known online as the Accidental Cajun, that's his moniker. He also did much of the, or many of the photos in my book. He interviewed me about the podcast. I don't remember. And I'm trying to scroll back through my list. I don't see it right off the top of my head, but he interviewed me about, he just interviewed me and we talked a lot about the podcast. So I would definitely go back and find that episode. But off the top of my head, the best thing about doing the podcast has been the community. So I don't know that I had any thoughts about it when I started it, but the people that I have gotten to meet, whether it's virtually online through the Facebook group or people reaching out to me by text or instant message or email or whatever it might be, as well as meeting people for a drink or randomly running into people that hear my voice and recognize me and stop to say hi, has been amazing. The other thing is I've gotten to know my own city so much better, and I've gotten to know business owners and museum curators and authors and chefs that I probably just would never have come across, you know, in my daily life. And many of those people, some of which are sponsors of the show, many of whom are not, have become really good friends. You know, people I just truly love and enjoy being with that I probably never would have come across, you know, otherwise. And so that sense of connection and community has really by far been the best thing about the podcast and really just totally unexpected. The worst thing, that's a harder question because I don't think there's many downsides. I will say the last 7 or 8 months have been really hard. And those of you that listen to every episode, maybe that subscribe, know that I have been through a run where I've missed a couple episodes. I've run maybe a couple more repeats than I normally have. And I think, one, business owners are really busy. They're struggling to stay to survive. You know, there's a shortage of labor. You know, I think that's a question that's going to come up here in a minute. But they're struggling. And so they don't have any time to promote. They don't have the time to talk. And it has all of a sudden, again, in the last 6 to 8 months, gotten really hard to get guests. So lots of these ideas that you all have suggested to me are wonderful, and they're going to go on the list. And I'm sure that's going to result in some episodes. But I've never, in the 6+ years I've done this, I've not had trouble the biggest trouble was building up the courage early on to ask people, but I've never had trouble getting guests. And lately, it's been a real struggle. And I say lately, it's been going on for months, where people either can't do it because of time, or they're out of town, or they just don't respond, or they say, I can do it, but I can't do it for 6 months or whatever. That's been really hard. So again, you know, I don't know that that's the end of the world, if that's the worst thing that's happened, but I had just been cruising along and really hadn't struggled for guests or things like that. And then all of a sudden, it's been this kind of wall for a while now. And so that's probably the worst. Again, in the grand scheme of things, the best so outweighs the worst. The other part of that is probably, like many of you listening, you know, I started this mostly as a hobby with an eye towards maybe it could turn into a business. Well, it's turned into a business, but so now I essentially have 2 full-time jobs and a family, you know, 10-year-old twins and a wife. And I'm not complaining about like any of that. Like, that is wonderful to have that sort of problem, but I didn't anticipate having 2 full-time jobs, and now I do, right? So I'm recording this on a Sunday. I got up early this morning to do it where I wouldn't interrupt time with the family, and then the recording got corrupted, and now I'm having to do it again. So now I'm missing time with the family. You know, that's my choice. My family is super supportive of it, and I appreciate that. But, you know, occasionally that stuff happens. Again, the best part, the community, is so much better than the quote-unquote worst part. But good question. And again, James, I thought, did a great job of interviewing me about the podcast. So go back and listen to that. Lance Needing asks, are there TV or local icons that are New Orleans legends, such as kids show hosts or guys that did a local TV variety shows or something similar? In Cleveland, we have many. And then he says, who are celebrities that claim New Orleans is their home that might surprise us? So there was a guy named Morgus the Magnificent, and I can't remember his given name. But he hosted a Friday night show, I want to say on the local PBS channel, but he hosted a Friday night show where he would sort of have this persona as a mad scientist, and he would do these skits, and then in between the skits, they would show a movie, and so it would be interrupted by these skits, right? And I remember as a kid, and I remember like Vincent Price type movies would be shown, you know, Friday night, and then in between there would be these segments. He was one of, there are several people who were on my list that I never got around to interviewing, and then they died. And he was one of them. He died in the last year. So Morgus was certainly a local character, kind of legend like that. I don't know if this was true across the country, but on Saturday mornings, they used to show Popeye cartoons, and they had sort of like the Mickey Mouse Club. They would have kids sitting in a box, like was branded with Popeyes on it, because Popeyes Fried Chicken was founded here in New Orleans by Al Copeland. And so there would be like the Saturday morning show where the kids would be there and there would be a host and they would interview them and, you know, they would have fried chicken and all this stuff. And then they would show a Popeyes cartoon and then come back to it. So I don't know if that was a unique New Orleans thing or not, but I certainly remember watching that in the mornings growing up. I think in terms of local legends, Chris Owens just passed away. She, owned a nightclub. She was in her late 80s, early 90s, and was still performing right up to the time of her death. The Easter Parade is named after Chris Owens, or she was like the host of the Easter Parade till this last year. Certainly a local legend and a character. I mentioned Al Copeland. He was the founder of Popeye's Fried Chicken, and he was quite the character in and of himself. Flamboyant and boisterous and over the top, but you know, his gift to us was Popeye's Fried Chicken. Interestingly, meteorologists have like a prominent presence in New Orleans, I think because of hurricanes. You know, we put a lot of stock in our meteorologists and they become quite well known. When I was a little boy, there was Nash Roberts. And then when I was a little bit older, there was a guy named Bob Breck. And now my friend and favorite, I shouldn't say favorite because there are a lot of good meteorologists in the city, but sort of local icon is Margaret Orr. She is terrific. She is certainly what my kids would call New Orleans famous. She would blush at that, but it is true, Margaret. You are New Orleans famous. And so I think because of hurricanes, meteorologists are, you know, pretty important in New Orleans and are pretty well known. In terms of people that live here, someone else I should get as a guest on the show is Wendell Pierce. He is a well-known actor. He's from New Orleans. He was on both the HBO series The Wire and Tremé. Also does a lot of great work in the community to try to help the community out, but he's a New Orleanian. John Goodman is a full-time resident in New Orleans in the Garden District. Interestingly enough, John Goodman bought his house from Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. And if you know Nine Inch Nails, I would love to see how that house was decorated when Trent Reznor owned it and how it's decorated now with John Goodman owning it. So obviously John Goodman, well known, but full-time resident in the city. You can see him out walking his dog. He lives about a block from a house that Sandra Bullock owns. I don't know how often she's here. She, post-Katrina, got very involved in trying to help one of the schools I mentioned earlier, converted to a charter school, but she was very, I think converted to a charter school, but Warren Easton High School, she invested a lot of time and money and resources into trying to help them. So I don't know how often she's in town, but John Goodman is a full-time resident. Bob Dylan, I don't know if he still does, but he, at least at one time, owned a house here in New Orleans, on the only private street in New Orleans. And then another name that came to mind, certainly a New Orleans legend, is Archie Manning. You may not know who Archie is, but you certainly know who his sons are if you enjoy football. His sons are Peyton and Eli Manning. They both obviously had long NFL careers. Their older brother, Cooper Manning, played college football and got hurt and didn't make it to the pros, but probably would have as a wide receiver. Well, now Cooper Manning's son, Arch Manning, named after his grandfather, Archie, is the number one prospect in the country and is going to go play at the University of Texas and almost certainly has an NFL career ahead of him, even though he is 17, 18 years old right now. They live, again, not that far from John Goodman. And one of the fun things at Mardi Gras is if you go to the intersection of the street where Archie Manning lives and St. Charles Avenue, which is down in the Garden District, you will often see some combination of the older Mannings, Eli Peyton and Cooper, throwing footballs with neighborhood kids, with their own kids, you know, taking pictures in the street and all that kind of stuff. We also, you know, now deceased, but we have Fats Domino, Dr. John, and Alan Toussaint. You know, so local musicians who had, you know, a huge impact on the musical scene worldwide. Elvis Costello, I don't know if he owns a home here, but he was really good friends with Alan Toussaint and spends a lot of time here in the city. And then Annie DeFranco. I don't know if she's a full-time resident. I think she is, but the popular singer spends an awful lot of time in the city, and I'm pretty sure considers New Orleans her full-time home. So I hope that answers your question. Lance also says, what's the deal with Big Shot Soda? Big Shot Soda was a New Orleans-based soda company. What made them unique, so the icon or the image on the bottles was, or still is, sort of a guy with like big jowls and a cigar sticking out of his mouth and kind of a hat. But the thing that made them interesting were their flavors. I'm not even sure if they sold a cola flavor, but they sold, and they still do, a grape, pineapple, strawberry, black cherry, root beer, cream soda, and that's just a few. They were bought out by a company and then later bought out by a national, maybe it's called National Soda Company. I'm not sure. They were started here in New Orleans. They're about 75 years old, and then they were eventually bought out, say, in the last 10 or 15 years by a major company. But what made them a big deal is, you know, now you go into a convenience store and there are dozens of different drinks and all kinds of varieties. But that didn't used to be the case. You know, we had all these different flavors. And this company, Big Shot, always had 10, 12, maybe 15 different flavors. And they seemed to always be changing, and some were seasonal. And so it was a big deal. And you still see them. You particularly see them in the kind of bodega, sort of small neighborhood convenience store places here in the city. But I certainly remember growing up with that and all the different flavors, right? At a time when you didn't have, again, you know, I'm thinking of 12 different flavors of Gatorade, right? You just didn't have that kind of stuff. So you had Big Shot Soda. So that's the deal. Robin Fay, is there something happening in town that's causing businesses to close besides the current economy? I kind of touched on this earlier. I think it's a combination of things. One, I don't know how much of it is unique to New Orleans and how much is happening across the country. I've started to travel again a little bit in the last few months for work and for pleasure. And I've seen, you know, the help wanted signs and that sort of thing in some of the places I've been. In New Orleans, I definitely think COVID had an impact. Depending on where you look at the numbers, you know, upwards of 1 million people have died in the country. And clearly that has an impact. I also think that some people have chosen to move. Some people have chosen to drop out of the workforce. In New Orleans, we have a real problem with affordable housing. It reminds me of, I don't know, now maybe 20, 30 years ago, maybe longer in San Francisco, where they have this great restaurant industry and people couldn't afford to live anywhere close by to support the restaurants and hotels. And that's happened in New Orleans. I think a big cause of that is Airbnbs. We have done a terrible job in the city of regulating or thinking about the impact of Airbnbs. And while there certainly can be a great side to renting a house, we've had corporations come in and buy dozens of houses, and all of a sudden you don't have a neighborhood and you don't have affordable housing. And so you have an economy here based on tourism, but the people working in those service industries, you know, the hotels, the restaurants, the bars, they can't afford to live here. They can't afford to live anywhere nearby in terms of a reasonable commute. So I think that that's definitely had an impact. I've said this, I think, on the show, and I certainly have mentioned it in the Facebook group. Anything you do in the city, do not look at the website and think that those are the hours. If you're going to go anywhere, a restaurant, basically anywhere, something to do, an outing, you need to call, because places are closing left and right. The hours are changing all the time. As I mentioned earlier, I'm struggling to get guests because people are just, they don't have the resources. They don't have the workers. So I don't know. I have no sense of, is this happening across the country at the same rate that it's happening in the city? But I do think the big driver here is this lack of affordable housing. There was a time when New Orleans was very inexpensive, and that time is long gone. And part of what you see, you know, I have a sponsor that's a realtor, Liz Wood, and she's doing a great job and does a booming business. And lots of people, including probably many of you listening, have moved to New Orleans from places that are much more expensive. So when you come here, it may seem like a value, and it may be for you relative to where you're coming from. But if you've been in New Orleans for a long time, or if you are, again, a service industry worker, you know, prices are getting pushed up and pushing people out. And so that's, I think, a really big contributor. But I think the Airbnb thing is a big deal, and that it has taken housing stock out of the rental market. Certainly Katrina did that, right? Literally destroyed housing stock. And then I think Airbnb hasn't helped that. And I say that as we own one rental property and we keep it well below, 30, 40% below market by choice. But obviously most people don't do that. And again, if you've converted a home to an Airbnb and you're a company that's bought up dozens of properties, then that's dozens of places that are no longer available for people in the service industry. So that's my take on it. I don't think I'm alone in that, but that's a problem. We're also hitting the time of year. July, August are really tough because of the heat. So we always have businesses close. So when you take the housing shortage on top of 2 years of COVID and now coming into the summer, you know, that's just a tough time. In fact, again, I want to have Ian McNulty on. He's been on a couple times to kind of talk about the state of the bar, restaurant, food scene in New Orleans. And this is a question I want to ask him, you know, from his perspective, as a food critic, food writer, what does he think? What is he seeing in terms of, are we getting more closures than typical? You know, what are his thoughts on that? Let's see. David Hughes, been a yearly visitor since Mardi Gras 1990. Just got your book this week. It's a definite thumbs up. Hey, thanks for that, David. Jeff Stewart, someone in here asked about the history of the fleur-de-lis in New Orleans. French, Italian, Catholic, French-Canadian. I'd love to hear an episode on that. I'll put that on the list. That's one I'm not even sure where to start. Actually, I do think the place to start is the Historic New Orleans Collection. They have a great archive there and a great archivist. So that's probably a place to start. Thanks, Jeff. John Nordyke, how easy slash hard is it to get into Kermit Ruffin's mother-in-law lounge? Is it safe to travel to and more importantly from? So it's really easy to get into. It's a relatively small venue on Claiborne Avenue. It has lately been closed a bunch. There was a whole issue about taxes, and then there was an argument about whether there were really taxes owed, and it seemed like right under the overpass there is often, it's where some second lines go. It's also where some funerals come through. Because Kermit's place is right there, it tends to be a gathering spot. There was a whole thing that I don't fully understand. And the bottom line is, sometimes it's been open, sometimes it's been closed. When it's open, it's very easy to get into. It's a great venue. It's a dive bar. They have terrific music. If Kermit's there, he cooks food, so you can get like free red beans and rice. As you probably know, John, Kermit is not only a talented musician, but he's quite a character. In terms of is it safe, I would not walk there. I also wouldn't drive, and I wouldn't drive there because you end up, when I go, I do typically drive, but I usually go early so that I know that I can park within a block. And certainly if you're staying in the French Quarter or the Central Business District, it's a cheap ride share. So it's not worth, even if you have a car, it's not worth trying to go down there and you end up parking a couple blocks away and you can end up in kind of a desolate area or an area near St. Louis Cemetery number 2. And you just don't want to be parking there and then particularly walking back at night in an area you don't know well by yourself. But it's fine if you take a ride share, you know, you get dropped off right at the front door. It's a fun venue. Long history. I think I had done an episode about it used to be Ernie Cadeau's mother-in-law lounge. Ernie Cadeau and his wife Antoinette were characters in their own right. Kermit has continued that and that he's his own character, but it's a fun place and they have a great musical lineup, whether it's Kermit performing or brass bands, and it's small, so it's intimate. So I would definitely go. It's easy to get into. Again, it's a place I would make sure I call and check to make sure that they're open before you go, but definitely go. Wow, that was lots of questions and suggestions. You can hear my voice is fading. Thanks so much to all of you who submitted questions and ideas for future topics. I'm going to hand this at this point over to the girls to close it out, but they wanted me to let you know that we need to record an updated closing because the one you're about to hear is from when they were 4 or 5 years old and they're 10 and they are not happy that dad is still using an old recording. So we need to re-record that. So hopefully you'll get a new recording of the kids closing out the show soon. But with that, I'm going to hand it over to the girls.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.